Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody. This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, your friendly psychologist, here on the couch with you, as we always are, at 11 o'clock in the morning, Pacific Standard Time, of course. And welcome wherever you're listening around the world. So nice to have you here. Man, we've got some great stuff on the show today. I'm going to be giving you some suggestions, ideas, a little bit of science. On our minds, how our brains work, and why we think the way we do. Specifically, I'm answering listeners' questions, which are most general, because these are the most common questions that I get in my practice. And some of the things we're going to be talking about today are why women generally leave men. And no matter what sexual orientation you have, why people leave their partners in general. We're going to be talking about that. Also, it helps sometimes to have a little bit of self-esteem when you're in a relationship. Because if you like yourself, people will like you. Or love you, people will love you. But you have to have a little bit more self-esteem, not narcissism, in order to project that you're okay with you. People like you and you like you. So that's what we're going to be talking about as well. Also, I'm going to be giving you some of the concepts about how self-talk, as we call it in psychology, how self-talk can help you sort of improve your life and, as a matter of fact, achieve more success in whatever category you'd like it to be, whether it's relationships or, you know, business or your career or finding your passions or anything else in life. I'm going to tell you just sort of how to do some healthy self-talk. We'll be going into a little bit of the studies about why incorporating imagery into your self-talk will actually change your brain, change those neural patterns up. That's what we have to do, guys. Everybody says to me, I'm going to think positive. Okay, but if your life is in the dumps, it's really hard to pull up those positive feelings, especially if you're depressed or if you're anxious. So I'm going to tell you sort of the facts behind how we can change those neural patterns a little bit based on science. Some of the habits that we can practice to help us out a little bit with our daily lives, day by day. We can just feel better. And that's the key, is every day, let's try to feel a little bit better. That's what it's all about. Also, if you'd like to call in, guys, 323-203-0815. If you have any questions or comments, and remember, you know, we don't like have a therapeutic relationship. I'm not your therapist, guys. I'm not giving you advice on how to live your life. All I'm giving you are suggestions about what I've learned, what I've seen, and how I've helped folks and their responses back to me on, yeah, that technique really worked. So that's what we're about, guys. Also, you can email me, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. If you have any questions or comments, if you're shy, you don't want to get your voice on the air, that's cool. Love to hear from you. So again, 323-203-0815. We'll phone Skype, latalkradio.com. Anyway, let's start off with one of the most common questions that I hear from men. I have a lot of male clients who come in to see me in my office and also who email me questions because they don't understand their partners. They don't understand why someone would be angry with them or why women want to leave them. Why is my wife? Why is my girlfriend? Why is my partner? Why do they want to leave me? What's going on with that? Well, almost every day I deal with women who are very frustrated with their partners. And the thing that I hear a lot of times is that they express no hope that their partners are ever going to understand what's, you know, going on or what frustrates them, let alone change enough to solve the problems. Okay. So from a lot of women's perspective, who I meet with, their partners with their, you know, issues are created by them because they say, oh, they don't understand. They don't know how to solve my problems. Okay. A lot of times women in relationships, and if you're dealing with two women in relationships, you got a problem because we kind of tend to see ourselves as a major force for resolving conflicts. Right? Right? Can you say that? Yeah, we want to resolve the conflicts. Most of the time, both sides of our brains are firing a little bit more. Left, right. Verbal communication, firing a lot. Emotion, a little bit higher. But what's really interesting is when I talk to their partners, many times who are male, they usually have a very different explanation as to why their partners feel the way they do. So these guys tell me that they often feel that the expectations of women in general and their partners have grown completely out of reach. So a lot of these guys tell me that they've made a gigantic effort to be caring and sensitive to their partners, but they don't get credit whatsoever for their contribution, whether they are single. I mean, you know, what I'm saying is they're not married, they're living, cohabitating, or have their own places, or even are married with kids. And a lot of men I talk to feel under enormous pressure to improve their, you know, financial support. They always want to, you know, raise their children well and improve the way they treat their wife and communicate. And a lot of, I got to tell you something, guys. A lot of men I see are emotionally exhausted. They don't know sort of what they're doing wrong. They want to fix the problem, what the problem is. But they get nothing but criticism. So, you know that the simpler role of guys in decades past has now been replaced by a little more complex and confusing role. Let's face it, especially in their relationships. And what I'm hearing a lot, just really kind of grinds on me when I hear guys tell me this. I go, don't say that. But they say, some women are born to complain and men must ignore it to survive. Oh, my God. It's my mom and dad right there. Boom. Others feel that women have come to expect so much of them that they're impossible to please. So there's no point in even trying. So they shut off. And a very few guys feel that they've learned to become good partners and that their partner females or male partners, but mostly females because it's our brains going off, have wanted, and the job seems to be getting more and more difficult. So it's really, I hear this all the time. Okay. So let me just share with you the most common reason that women tell me that they want to leave their partners is mental cruelty. Huh? You know, in some states, you have to have legal grounds for divorce. It's not happening in California, unless you have like an annulment, I think. So when legal grounds for divorce are stated in different states, wherever you're listening from, about half say that they've been emotionally abused. I mean, it's just something to say, right? But the mental cruelty that they talk about is rarely the result of their husbands or partners or live-ins' efforts to drive them crazy. What I find, and I say, that's not emotional abuse. What are you talking about? But it's usually their partners being indifferent not communicating, and sort of demonstrating other forms of neglect. Okay? It's just like neglect is a really big thing. All right? So, I don't know. When all forms of, you know, neglect from our partners are grouped together, we find it's really far ahead of all the other reasons combined. That's what we as women think a lot of times. And it doesn't, you know, it's a, many times our partners work, they have to travel a lot. You know, they work their booty off. I know in this city alone, I would say over half of my clients work at least 9 hours to 10 hours a day to keep up with all the work. A lot of companies are downsizing. They're throwing a lot more work on people. And they are wanting to keep their job, so they take it home. You know, ah, he's ignoring me. It's like, you don't understand. I have to finish this project by Monday. And this is the way it goes. And I'm just kind of telling women and men, there are differences. So while neglect is probably the most common reason that I hear that women leave men, it's really hard to convince guys that it's a legitimate reason. Something they should avoid at all costs. See? Okay, so let me just lay it out for you guys. I know you've probably heard this before, but let me just refresh. Okay. Some of the common complaints I hear from women is, he ignores me except when he wants sex. He sits and watches TV or is on his computer when he could be talking to me. He's on his phone, quote, doing business, unquote, when he could be talking to me. Or when he's at work or he's away doing things, he rarely calls me or texts me to see how I'm doing. He hurts my feelings and never apologizes. Instead, he tells me, I'm too sensitive. All right. Now, here's the dealio. A lot of guys are mystified by these complaints. Huh? Well, I thought I texted her this morning and said, hey, good morning, honey. I'm crazed at work. How are you? And they feel that their partners demand too much. And that, you know, most other women would be ecstatic if they were married to them. You know, a lot of guys tell me, oh, my wife's so spoiled. She wants me to text her all day. She wants me to call her off and on. So let me ask you this. Do you think women expect too much of their husbands or their partners? Or are guys doing less for their girlfriends, partners, wives than they should? And I've spoken to guys over and over again that their partners usually don't expect too much of them. I keep saying this. I know. And when they understand and respond to their partner's frustration, this is like a huge aha moment for their partners. I'm not blaming you guys. I'm really not. Our brains are different. We function differently. Guys want to solve the problem. Women want to talk about the problem. So, you know, responding, understanding, learning how to communicate is really the biggie. Honestly, a lot of times women are not expecting more effort from guys in relationships. You know, they want efforts in a different direction. You know, I guess we are a little pushy, naggy, bitchy. I guess we are a little bit sometimes. So what I found, though, I'm just going to summarize it for you just quickly here. What women usually want in a partner is a soulmate. Okay? What does that mean? Somebody they can trust who's there for them when they have an issue. Someone who takes their feelings into account when decisions are being made. Someone whom they feel emotionally connected to. Not just sexually. Sex is really important too. It's really important. But that emotional part. Okay? So I just thought I'd lay it out for you as to what I hear a lot of and what really might kind of get you guys to come together on your differences. You know, there's that whole thing of active listening, and I'm going to talk to you about that a little bit later because that's really important, you know, really an important thing about communication. And it's not, Don't worry, guys. You're not going to have to tune out on this one. I'm not making fun of you. It's the brains are different. Men's and women's brains are different, but they're very similar in that we can both understand how to communicate if we're, you know, really taught how to do it. All right. So those are some of the facts about why women leave their male partners, or why some partners in any sexual orientation kind of relationship. You gotta listen. You gotta work on it. Really, I think a lot of women particularly don't expect as much as you think. I think what happens is we get into this kind of like fear that we're not being listened to. So we keep on asking for things to be done, or we start nagging, and it kind of snowballs. And sometimes we women have to just shut up. Shut up. Compliment. When your partner does something really loving or kind or not, don't take it for granted. Say, wow, that was so awesome. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. You're cool. You're so cool to think of doing that. Thank you so much. That'll get you a lot further than nagging all the time and complaining. And don't tell your family. Don't discuss your problems in your relationship with your family. Please. Anybody. In-laws, your immediate, you know. I mean, come on, don't do it. Because what happens is when we have problems with our partners, our family usually wants to protect us. And then they harbor these nasty feelings about our partners. And then what happens is when we finally get some therapy or couples therapy, we're getting along great, the family's still holding on to, yeah, but he's kind of a jerk. Or, yeah, but she's kind of a bitch. So try not to discuss these things with, or only with folks you really, truly trust as friends, possibly, and or certain relatives who are not going to spread it amongst the groups, so everyone can hate your partner just because you need to sort of download on your issues with that person. So there you go. Thank you guys so much for emailing me, and thank you for, you know, giving me some of these ideas for questions, you know, that you want to learn more about. How can you answer this thing? Why are women so PO'd at men? Why are they leaving guys? What's going on here? Just help me understand. Yeah, nobody's bad. That's the way I always say it. It's like, unless you're doing the, you know, big stuff, physically, emotionally, abuse, you know, breaking the laws, things like that, you know, hurting yourself mentally, physically, drugs, whatever. Outside of that, we all just learn lessons along the way with our partners. We're all growing constantly. Even when you guys are like 50 years old, 60 years old, 70, we're still learning and growing about ourselves. Hopefully, you want to still open up and learn how to communicate better. So I always say we're not bad people. We all make mistakes. We all do things that are not great throughout our lives. That's the way we learn. You know, that's the way we learned. So we hopefully learn from those mistakes. We are not bad. Yes, we've done stupid things, maybe bad things. We've hurt people. We've told people off. We've been very defensive because of our own insecurities. But basically, we're all students. That's the way I look at it. And what did you learn from that lesson? What did you learn in that emotional clash? When that guy you thought was the best and wonderful and charming and handsome and your soulmate dumped you for a younger woman. Yeah, well, it's okay. It's all right. It's all right. You didn't want somebody who didn't want you. That's the way it is. All right. So that is that's the dealio about what's going on with why a lot of women are, you know, trying to get divorced or mad at men and leaving men. So there you go. So I get a lot of people who come in and say to me, well, you're really into cognitive behavioral therapy. And I like that. I think it's really cool. So that means what we do cognitively, we change our thinking. So if we have negative thoughts all the time, right, based on bad experiences, we're going to assume a lot of things, okay? And then we're going to apply the negativity to the rest of our lives. That's the thing. Bad experiences, hurtful experiences. We're always hypervigilant, on the lookout to be hurt. That's the deal. And so how do we change that? They go, well, you change your thinking. but it goes beyond that. We have to change those neural patterns that are so fixed to immediately survive anything we might perceive as a slight or a negative thing, or to project fears. What if he leaves me? You've only had the third date. Hello. What if I get cancer? Well, your lab showed that you look pretty good. We all fear that, but don't overwhelm yourself with fears, because it's not in our reality at the moment. And every day you can wake up and say, well, I'm grateful for being here and all the things I have around me. So what's this cognitive behavioral thing? So you think differently, you change your thoughts, and I'll tell you how to kind of do that. And then you change your behaviors. That'll change your life a little bit, because you're stepping out into the new. You're doing different things that you wouldn't regularly do. Now, so let's take a look at that. Self-talk is simply stated in psychology. It's kind of a way to override our past negative programming. Okay? So it's like erasing or replacing it with conscious, positive new directions. Like I just said, self-talk is, it's kind of a practical way to live our lives. So it's active intent, right? Rather than what I call passive acceptance. So with self-talk, okay, and I'm not talking about the people that are talking to the individuals on the street who are hallucinations. I mean, yeah, we can talk to ourselves. People go, that person's talking to themselves. They must be crazy. And I think it's okay to self-talk, but kind of do it in your mind, maybe. So with self-talk, we have a way to give new directions to our subconscious minds by talking to ourselves in a different way. So we're consciously reprogramming our internal control centers, our neural patterns, with words and statements which are more effective and more helpful to every part of us that we'd like to improve. Okay, so the self-talk statements that we create for ourselves paint sort of a new internal picture of ourselves. All right. So there are five levels we kind of go through of self-talk. And I want you guys to think about, what level are you at? How do you function every day? Do you have a tough life? Have you had a tough upbringing? Are you grumpy in the mornings? Are you grumpy at night? Are you grumpy during the day? Do you not feel happy? So let's just sort of identify the kind of inner voice that you have. Okay, here's the five levels. Number one, this is level one of self-talk. That level one means no good. All right? No good. Are you there? Are you here? So this is the level of negative acceptance. All right? So it's dominated by thoughts of, I can't. I could never do that. I'm tired and I just don't have the energy. Things like that. Those gems that we all come up with. Oh, I don't feel I'm worthy. I'm not worthy of that person. I'm not worthy of that job. They're not going to like me. Okay. Unfortunately, by the way, based on what, well, it's, I'm a psychologist, so I'm going to be hearing this all the time, but most people, even outside of my office I speak to, practice this form of self-talk. It needs to go, guys. It's the dominant form. I can't. I could never. I should have. I used to have energy, but I don't. These, affirmative statements are really bad. So you got to, okay, you there with me? So you got to get out of this negative acceptance. Can't do things. All right, number two. This is level two self-talk. Now, this is a better level here. We're getting up here in the ladder of feeling a little better, but it's still not a goodie. Okay. The level of recognition and need to change. This is the, this is when folks come to see me. So what I hear a lot of is phrases like, I need to start going to the gym. I should get out there in the dating world. I really should join more dating apps and get more social. I should get more active and volunteer Okay, so this is like slightly better than level one, but it's kind of not where we want to spend our time. Okay. See, the problem with that is that it recognizes a problem, which is good. It's the first step, but it offers no solution. All right. So level, are you there? Are you in self-talk? Okay. Many people are in self-talk level two. You know, maybe I should do that. I need to do that. So we've eliminated the word never. I could never do that. I can't. I don't deserve. But okay. We're moving on to level three self-talk. This is the level of decision to change. All right. So this consists of phrases like, I never and I no longer. Okay. So now you're committed to change and are clear on what you're going to stop doing, and say things like, I no longer smoke. Even though you sneak one once in a while. I don't put off going to the gym because I think it's really important. Okay. So these are the things that you are no longer doing. I no longer procrastinate as badly as I used to. I no longer put off going to the gym at least three times a week or walking three times a week. I no longer get that cruddy fast food four times a week. I only do it twice. So these are good. This is powerful because you're programming new instructions to your subconscious mind, because you're self-talking. You're thinking these thoughts. You're changing your language. All right. Level four. This is the better you. This is the most powerful kind of self-talk right here. This is what we need to move to. Okay, this is all about the I am statements. I'm in control of my life. I'm doing well. I am healthy. I'm pretty enthusiastic. Okay, this level of self-talk inspires, encourages, and urges, implores. It does all this cool stuff. It sort of tugs at our hearts. It touches our hopes. It paints the picture that color our dreams. See, with this level four self-talk, I am this. All right. You got to get there, though. It excites and demands. It pushes us forward. It strengthens our armor. And a lot of people come to me and they say, okay, you know what? Fake it to make it. Well, yeah, I guess. But the point is, we have to believe these things. When we're saying level four self-talk, we have to believe that I am in control of my life. We are. No one can control you unless you're in jail. Okay, that's all right. But you're still in control of your mind. You're still in control of your own thoughts and mind. I'm doing pretty well. I'm healthy. Well, I'm not as healthy as I'd like to be, but I'm pretty energetic and I'm really taking care of myself. All right. So here's the deal. What you have to do is believe these things. How can we believe these things? So a lot of recent studies say that in order to believe the self-talk that's level four, the good stuff, we've got to train our brains to believe it. And the way we train our brains to believe it is we incorporate imagery. All right, so we see ourselves. Let's just take an example. Here's how we do it. I'm in control of my life, and I'm doing really well. All right, there you go. Now, what I want you to do is I want you all, when you're saying the self-talk that's positive, you can't just change your life by saying these words. You've got to have a connection with emotion. You've got to have a visualization or an imagery of yourself being successful, whatever it is. Wherever you're sitting, whatever your office you're sitting in, whatever you're wearing, visualize this. Let's just say I'm successful in my life. I'm doing what I want to do. You need to take quiet times every day and sit and see yourself doing these things. Now, you can see and visualize you're wearing an outfit, you're sitting at a desk, you're dealing with people, you're on the computer, but it's all feeling good. That's the key. You've got to combine the feeling of being successful with those self-talk thoughts. So how do we do that? All right. You go to places that felt good in the past. You go in your mind to when you got that promotion, when you got a job offer, and you were so excited about it, or whatever the situation is, when you found romance, you're looking for a partner. You go back to the places that felt great. Try to recapture those feelings from the past. Oh, God, that felt so good when I was told that I got the job. Oh, recreate it. Now, move on to your imagery of you with that feeling being where you want to be. That feeling is what kicks it over into changing your neural patterns. Way back, long time ago, they had a sort of a kind of a technique called psycho-cybernetics. They started using that on athletes, actually Olympians, where they would go into their little minds of meditation in the morning, and then they'd see themselves and feel themselves crossing that finish line first, or making that, you know, triple jump or whatever they're doing off the uneven parallel bars and landing perfectly balanced. Seeing it in their minds and feeling it, feeling the emotion of the victory, feeling the emotion of, oh, I'm working it. I'm in the right thing. I've got it right. What they found with this type of psycho-cybernetics tool is that the Olympian athletes who practiced this did much better in receiving awards, yeah, than those who didn't. And then they carried it on and on and on and on. And then in 1991, there was a doctor named Andrew Armour. He's a medical doctor and a PhD. 1991. Why does this stuff work? He said. Why does putting the emotion with the thought work? He found that our hearts, right? Everybody's about, oh, my heart's broken. The heart literally has a mind of its own. Why? The heart has as many as 40,000 neurons. That means the heart has a nervous system, neural mind, nervous system that functions independently of the brain. All right? The technical term coined for this system is it's called the intrinsic cardiac nervous system, more commonly known as the heart brain. You've heard of that. Our heart brain. So when we connect the emotions, okay, when we connect the emotions with our thoughts, our imageries, our victories, our good feelings, we're changing the patterns in our brains. So to review again, okay, to get to the level 4 self-talk, to have effectively change those brain patterns of yours, you got to close your eyes for a moment every day. You know, you can meditate if you want. That's cool. But what we're doing is action-oriented inside self-talk. Tell yourself that you are doing well with your profession. Whatever you'd like. I'm going to find a great relationship because I deserve it. See yourself with someone. See yourself in the work environment and take those good feelings from the past, incorporate them into your movie and visualize it. Visualize it, see it, feel it. Do that for even 10 minutes a day if you can. You're going to start changing your neural patterns. Your brain is not going to be going, yeah, but what if it's not going to go to level 1 self-talk, level 2 or 3? You know? I need to do this. I should do this. I can't do this. It's going to start immediately sort of turning to, yeah, I am that and I am creating these things in my life. That's the amazing thing. If you want to find out more about these concepts, there's a lot of people who are doing this right now. I mean, Dr. Joe Dispenza, who I've had on the show before, has a great new book. It's called Becoming Supernatural. Check out a lot of his podcasts on YouTube. Amazing stuff. He's a scientist. He's a neurobiologist. Brain and heart connected. Think things, feel things. Embrace them. Envision them. Changing the brain. Also, Greg Braden is awesome too. He is very similar. He's a little less scientific than Dr. Dispenza, but good stuff to change your life, self-talk. with visualization and emotion. It all works together. That's the way it is. This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you're on the couch. Thank you guys so much for being with me here. And I appreciate you emailing me at straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. A lot of these questions you want answered. I really wanted to get to this stuff today because, you know, I hear this all the time. And also, this is taken from a lot of people who sit in my office. Same questions, same problems, same issues. Really, really the same thing. So, yeah. So that's what I want to just kind of point out. This is where a lot of this stuff is coming from. And also, if you want to call in, that's cool. I'm on a roll here because I'm answering some email questions, but it's 323-203-0815 here in beautiful Southern California. All right. So what we're going to do, so we've moved on from self-talk. So helping yourself, changing your thoughts, changing your future. All right. All right. So we're going to get to improving your self-esteem in just a little bit because I really want you to do that. It's really important. But what I want to do is I want to answer one of the questions that's very similar to the first one, is why women get so frustrated and why women now are leaving men. Sort of similar. But a lot of questions that I get are how and why do certain relationships last longer? You know, people come to me and they say, wow, we've been married for 30 years. Well, they're coming to me because they still have the same old goofy arguments that they just kind of need to tweak a little bit, tweak their communication skills a little bit. And that's cool. So there's this really good book, and I'm going to share some wonderful information about why love lasts for some people more than others. What are some of the key ingredients? All right. You want a long-term relationship with someone, whether you want kids, whether you want just to be career people, whatever it is. This is for all partners, all types of partners. All right. All sexual orientations, all partners. So the book is called The Good Marriage. And it's also for people cohabitating. Doesn't have to be marriage, folks. People who are together with their partners. The Good Marriage, How and Why Love Lasts. All right. And it's written by psychologist Dr. Judith Wallerstein. She's awesome. So what she did is she carried out like 50 in-depth interviews with couples. I mean, these were really heavy interviews. If you go into the stuff to read some, you know, as a sort of a peer review in her journal stuff, this is really a legit study here. So anyway, she did these interviews with 50 couples who were married for at least 9 years. They were together, they were married, or they were cohabitating. Common law, folks. Okay. And some of them had children together. Some of them were independent and independently, you know, regarded their coupling as pretty happy. All right? Pretty happy. Together at least 9 years. So she identified 9 psychological tasks, as she called them, as the pillars on which any relationship that's successful will rest. Ready? All right, here it is. 9 things, the good marriage, the good partnerships, why the good ones last. And this is, the first one's really hard. This is the most common thing I hear all the time. It's really hard to do. You have to separate emotionally from your childhood. Okay, I'm talking Freud stuff here. If you're going to partner with someone, I'm not talking about blow your family away and don't talk to them or don't be with them. You've got to work through a lot of your unresolved buttons from the past. A lot of those old messages that you grew up believing about yourself. You're not good enough. You're not smart enough. You'll never be anything. You're not whatever enough of enough. From whoever gave you those messages, could have been mom, dad, granny, aunts, uncles, whoever gave you those messages. You've got to separate emotionally from those childhood experiences. And the experiences, when I say childhood, I'm talking about not even necessarily a little person. I'm talking about middle school, high school. We're carrying all those messages. Young adulthood, we still carry out those messages until we learn. All right? So you need to separate emotionally from your childhood and all those issues that you carried with you to bring into a good partnership. So you can invest in that partnership. Okay? So you've got to redefine the lines of connection and who you are. And that's a difficult thing to do sometimes with our family. So we need to love them for who they are and what they were. And we understand that maybe they tried the best they could as parents and they didn't do well. Whoever were our caregivers. We were bullied in school. We didn't feel worthy. You know, these things pile up like a snowball gathering more and bigger and snow within itself. So we have bad experiences growing up. Then we have bad bullies at school. And then we have the girl or the guy who dumps us. And then we have the... So this all piles into a giant, I am not worthy, I'm not lovable. You got to really separate all that stuff a lot of times. Because what we tend to do is we tend to take that crud with us, feeling less than in whatever aspect of our lives. Not as pretty as, not as good looking as, not as worthy, not as successful, not as smart. We bring that into our relationships. We project that junk onto our partner. Okay. So if you need to go to therapy, kind of explore some of these things that you keep carrying on, and when your partner says something that's pretty fairly benign, and you take it as a slight, he's calling me, you know, a loser, or he's saying I'm not pretty enough, or got to work on yourself. Okay, number one, that was a biggie. A lot of the couples that Dr. Wallerstein interviewed who were successful said, yeah, these people kind of had to separate their own stuff from their upbringing and bring new truth into their relationship. All right, here we go. One of the other tasks, building togetherness based on mutual identification, shared intimacy, and an expanded conscious. What does that mean? Okay, that means you've got to really understand your partner. You've got to try to get who they are. Okay, you've got to share intimacy. In other words, you've got to be open about some of your fears, some of your stuff. And both of you have to be able to feel safe to do that. Well, at the same time, sometimes we need to set boundaries to protect our own autonomy. We do need time away from each other. Yeah, you do need that. You need your own. I got to find myself. I need to go home and just gel out, watch whatever, Netflix. I need to play video games. No, I hear that a lot. I need to zone for an hour and play. Yes, guys, that's mostly you. I know. Okay, but it's understanding boundaries. It's understanding what each other needs and being open. Number three of the nine tasks, very important to keep a relationship lasting. Establish a rich and pleasurable sexual relationship. And you've got to protect it from the workplace, kids. You got to make time for yourselves. I know, if you have kids, I get it. I know, you're always, yeah, they come first, they do. But you have to have time for yourselves. Go on dates. Have pleasurable time for yourself. Now, when you have infants, it's a little difficult. You get through that period, okay. Then you got to trust somebody to take care of the kids and so you can have nice times together again. Get back to that old kind of fun time when you guys first started meeting each other. Find the fireworks. Find the flame. Don't let it get blown out. All right. Now, if you decide to have kids, Dr. Wallerstein just kind of threw this one in as one of the nine tasks. She says, for couples with children, what she found is the successful ones both embraced the daunting roles of parenthood. And they both absorbed the impact of a new baby in their lives. So there's, you know, sleep deprivation, and their whole lives are living 24/7, usually around caring for this infant. And you lose yourself. Yep. And at the same time, the couple has to continue the work of protecting their own privacy. Okay? All right. That's for those who, you know, have kids. All right, here we go. We're moving on to number five. This is the nine tasks of folks who have really successful relationships. Confront and master the inevitable crises of life. I know, easy to say, but these are the things. These are the biggies. These are the bullet points that make for happy relationships long term. You've got to maintain the strength of the bond that you guys have in the face of adversity. You got to create a safe haven within the marriage or within the partnership or cohabitation, whatever it is, for the expression of difference, anger, and conflict. It's okay to express yourself. Yeah, you don't have to walk on eggshells. And if you do, there's something wrong with that. You've got to be able to lovingly and sometimes angrily and have conflict. That's normal. There's adversity. Everybody has differences. And if you're married, yeah, you know what I'm going to say, don't you? You got the in-laws. Ah! Okay, so how do you... You're lucky if you have great in-laws. Ooh, good for you. But if you... you know, have these conflicts come up. Yeah, you always have adversity. There's always financial issues. There's always stress. There's always stuff going on in our lives. Relatives get ill. You just kind of confront and master those crises of life together. You work as a bond to fix problems. What can I do to help you? What can I do to... You share the feelings of sorrow. You share the feelings together. You work together. Support each other emotionally. Another biggie that Dr. Wallerstein said is to use humor and laughter to keep things in perspective. It kind of avoids boredom and isolation, too. Lighten up. Jeez. Come on. We've got to lighten up. Also, when we lighten up, lighten, it kind of lights up those heart neurons I was talking about in the brain that works together. It makes us feel better, changes the neural patterns a little bit. Humor and laughter. Norman Cousins, the dude who did the study and wrote the book about laughter being therapeutic and medically viable for keeping people healthy. Good stuff. All right. Number eight. Provide nurturance and comfort each other. Satisfied each partner's need for dependency. And offering continuing encouragement and support. Oh my God, I said the D word. Dependency? What? I'm not saying codependent. I'm not saying it like that, guys. I'm saying you've got to provide nurturance and comfort. Okay? You know, you've got to offer continuing encouragement and support. Like I said earlier in the show, you know, a lot of men who I see in my practice say, I do so much, I feel, but I don't get acknowledged for it. It's almost like it's assumed that I'm, you know, got to do all these tasks and all these jumping over hoops and doing happy wife, happy life, but I don't get acknowledgement for it. So you have to offer continuing encouragement and support. And you always have to say, God, appreciate someone. I thank you so much for being there for me. Thank you so much for being so cool and helping me with this task today. Really, really, really a huge thing. Number nine, Dr. Wallerstein's nine of nine tasks to keep a healthy relationship for a long time. What do you think it is? What didn't I say yet? Well, I did say the sex. I did say that. You know that. You heard that a little earlier, right? You've got to keep alive the romantic, idealized images of falling in love. Okay, no, I know. Yeah, but I've gained weight. I hate my body. I've got this horrible job. There's a sober realities of a lot of crud that's come into our lives, wrought by time. How can I be romantic when I'm feeling like doo-doo? I don't like who I am. I'm tired all the time. I have no energy. And if you have kids, I got to get them to school and then get them to do homework and on and on and on. Okay. How do you keep alive and romantic? You got to not forget who that person was when you met them. Why you fell in love. All right? Of course you've got to face things the sober realities of the changes wrought by time, as I call them, right? Ah, how do we do that? We've got to appreciate our partners. Keep the appreciation going. Keep the love going. Keep the sexual relationship as good as you can so you can have intimate or just touch each other. Touch is good. Touch is very good. Thank you guys so much for being on the couch with me today. I appreciate you all emailing me at straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. And I hope I helped you answer some of your questions and concerns today. All right, next week I've got an author. We're going to be talking about how to do some rituals that are going to make our lives a little bit better. Rituals? Ah, that's scary. All right. It's good. It'll be easy. It'll be fun. I'm really going to help you with these things. Thanks, guys, for listening. Dr. Michelle Cohen here. Thanks for being on the couch. And do take care of yourself first. See, then you'll be great for other people. That's the way it works. Bye-bye.